This morning we're going to have a great call because we've got one of the almost old timers, Christoph, who used to know, who's always known and referred to on Barry's side as Conti Schultz. Now Christoph studied with the Essene, and the Essene is the guy who literally brought into our current experience from his memory of his time with the Essene people that Jesus was trained with, and he brought into our experience a few different alchemical techniques, namely and specifically, one of them being the wet method, which is what I use to make ormus, and what a lot of us do to make ormus, using either ocean water or sea salt, dead sea salts, and so on. And so it's a real joy to have a first-hand report of the scene from Christoph this morning, and this afternoon, this evening for you guys, because here I am on Sunday morning, just in case you don't know. If you ever think the world's going to hell in a handbasket and you don't think you're going to last through the night, all you have to do is call me and I will tell you, because I'm a day ahead of you, and I can tell you how it's going to go. So here I am at just past 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, and all is well for tomorrow. In the meantime, back to the call. I distracted myself. Christoph was also going to talk about what his experience was studying with the Essene. And I know he particularly wants to talk about, and he's been chomping at the bit to talk about this, the effect of the global cooperative ormus making, which has just been fabulous. So I had to stop Christoph from talking about that a couple of times because he wanted to tell a story over our meet and greet time before everyone came in. I didn't want him to waste all those wonderful details of what's going on, because we're having such an amazing time with making ormus as a group. It seems to empower everyone's ormus, because from my point of view, ormus is conscious, and it seems to be connected to all the other ormi around the planet. You know, that's an array from me that I'll get into later. In the meantime, I want you guys to just say welcome, say hello, if you're unmuted, to Christoph, our guest, from, whereabouts are you, Christoph? Somewhere up in Canada. Where is that, Christoph?
I'm in the Okanagan Valley, British Columbia, beautiful British Columbia, Canada, right now, at a friend's place, a friend named Helen. And we do alchemy sessions regularly whenever we manage to find just the right moment. Sometimes it takes 3 or 4 months before the two of us can find just the right moment to do it. And that's part of the alchemy, too, part of the whole process of being able to find the right moment.
So, Christoph, would you tell us how you first got into the whole ormus thing? What got your attention? How did it happen? Start from the beginning.
Okay, from the very beginning, I got very interested in the American fellow who kind of reintroduced ormus to the world. I'm sure most of you know about David Hudson. So I went to hear one of his talks in Yelm, Washington, and I got inspired, so I joined his Science of the Spirit Foundation, because he was quite a motivational speaker and was burning up money to get one of his laboratories going. And then I waited and waited to hear, not much developed because of red tape, etc. Won't get into all that long story. But then I didn't lose my focus, because I realized that, no, there's something to that. It doesn't matter whether it happens through David Hudson or some other way, and I ended up meeting an old baker, probably in his late 80s, here in the Okanagan Valley. And this old baker, I told him my story about that I'm interested in the ormus of David Hudson. Don't really know why I even told him the story, because I didn't think he was even really interested in that stuff, but he just wanted to know what's happening in my life. So he's the one that put me on to, everyone knows him as the Essene, and said, you've got to come sometime and meet the Essene, because this guy actually knows how to make it himself. He's kind of a master at making ormus. I kind of thought it was dubious at the time. I really didn't know what to make of what Jack the Baker was on about. But I went inside and checked on it, and I said, okay, Jack, sometime I'll go with you and meet him. And my soulmate at the time, who I was with and traveling with and having a lot of adventures with, she went to that very same day that Jack talked about it and met him, met Hussein. And they really reconnected. It was like they were, well, I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, soulmates, but they were like kindred spirits. And really, I have her to thank for the connection with Hussein because he really enjoyed her company a lot and ended up teaching the two of us about alchemy, how to make the ormus. So that's the beginning of the story.
And so once you met the Hussein, how did it unfold after that?
Oh, okay. The Hussein, because he's really, I'd say, a true master, I've hardly met anyone with that degree or, I guess you could say, level of mastery. And he showed it to me over time. One was that he was able to do a really awesome transmutation of metals from you name the metal to another metal. And I witnessed this. It wasn't just, you know, hearsay in his laboratory. And then he also was able to move quite large objects with his mind. One case in point was when I got my car stuck against a rock in his driveway, a sharp incline, and I just couldn't move forward, couldn't move backwards. And came over to check out the situation. And being the compassionate fellow that he is, he just proceeded to lift the rock with his mind, and I was able to drive out, no problem. So I was amazed, to say the least, but because I'd been to India a few years prior to meeting Hussein, I was kind of ready for people who could use their mind in ways that, you know, aren't textbook and aren't learned like that. So I said, okay, I'm meeting a real master here, someone who's actually mastered himself.
Like a human Yoda.
What's that?
Like a human Yoda.
What I saw, witnessed, was that he was able to make beautiful ormus, just absolutely stellar ormus, where someone would take it and they would have a major realization just from taking one dose of ormus.
So the guy had a very high level of mastery.
When did you first meet him?
He had a free mind, like a totally free mind. Whatever he put his mind to, he was able to accomplish. You know, be it transmuting metals from, you know, obviously a base metal to a more precious metal, or lifting a rock with his mind. Whatever he set his mind to, he just did. He just accomplished. And I loved him for his simplicity, that just wherever he put his mind, he did what he set out to do.
When did you first meet him? What year?
Oh, boy. Let me look back in time now. It would have been the late 1990s in either 1996 or 97. I think it was 1996.
I think that's about, I think I met him in 97. I'm not sure. I think it was about the same time.
Is that Barry talking or no?
Yeah, this is Barry.
Yeah, so some of the things that I witnessed, the beautiful transmutations he did, just spot on transmutations of metal to ormus and then ormus back to metal, but a different type of metal. I mean, it was just so beautiful to witness. Sometimes tears came to my eyes witnessing that he was someone that could do that on the planet. You know, so to me, he seemed in some ways supernatural.
So how much time did you spend in his space studying with him, Christoph?
Well, when he met my soulmate and me, he told her that as far as he was concerned, his destiny was that he was going to be there for us for a year, exactly to teach us 1 year. And one of the really important lessons that he was trying to imprint upon me, and he did mention quite a few times, was that if you stay with Ormus long enough, and he actually gave me a number, I won't say this applies to everybody, but it applies to me, that once you take the Ormus for 12 years, that you will meet your angel. And at that point, your angel will take over as your teacher and your guide. And you don't just meet them, you know, in a dream state or an ethereal way, but actually as a physical manifestation. And why I'm mentioning this is because the Hussein mostly worked with his angel as his guide to ask whatever questions, including whether or not he should tutor me and my soulmate at the time, He was personally reluctant to reveal to us the wet method, but on the promptings of his angel, and I believe it was three times his angel prompted him to teach us, he did then. He did actually listen to his angel.
Did you get him? Did you get him to go to Yelm eventually?
Yelm. Yes. One of the, I don't know if you can call it coincidences, but maybe it was coincidence or destiny, is the Essene was telling myself, and especially my soulmate, because he was quite close to her and recognized her from a previous life. And you recognized her the same way you would recognize a friend that you hadn't seen for maybe a year, because he explained to us that he has continuous memory for the last 10 lifetimes. So about, I think he was saying close to 4,000 years of continuous memory. So he recognized her from a lifetime close to 4,000 years ago, and of course because of that recognition he was able to trust her. One of the things that the Essene wanted to do out of the goodness of his heart, and that's why I always considered him a magnanimous being, was to bring the knowledge of Ormus making back to the Earth, back to the planet at this time. On a large scale, not a limited scale of a few elite alchemists, or maybe I better put academic type of alchemists, but he was really a man who believed in we the people, and that we can do it. So he was looking for a venue to bring it out to the world, not just the United States or North America, but a place that would be international, an international forum where it could be done, you know, fairly quickly with a bunch of intelligent people. And one time I heard him say to my soulmate that he did approach the, I think it's called the Mormon Church, some of the elders. They weren't interested in that, so he didn't proceed with that any further. And when my soulmate and me mentioned that we go to Rampa School in Yelm, Washington, Rampa School of Enlightenment, he thought that that would be a really appropriate venue because of it being such an international school and so open-minded to start promoting his method, the wet method of alchemy there.
Did you get to see him teach at the Rampa School?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. He did a brilliant job, like a really just brilliant job. Like he was, I think he disarmed quite a few people because of his simplicity, and that he was quite simple and very straightforward. No show and no complexity in him whatsoever. He just basically proceeded to teach people under the auspices of Jay-Z Knight, who was the hostess for him, and he even did it for free because Jay-Z Knight is known to promote physicists, biochemists, people who've done a great deal of work in their field, and pay them to teach at her school, teach her students, myself included. And the Essene, he didn't want to accept money for, you know, teaching something as lofty as the wet methods of alchemy, so he didn't. And in exchange for not accepting the money, of course, he got to teach exactly the way that he wanted to with no sort of negotiations whatsoever, and so he did in his wonderfully simple way.
Did he do a demo, or did he help people to demonstrate this stuff? Did he show people how to do it? What did he do there?
Literally, yeah, he literally showed people the methodology, right, which we're all pretty much familiar now, the most popular methodology. I mean, he knew so many methods to make it, but he showed the simplest way because he had his experience teaching myself and my soulmate a very simple way, which is the wet method using sea salt or seawater or Dead Sea water or Salt Lake City water.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, we were his guinea pigs to see how ordinary folks would be able to do the alchemy. So he was encouraged by what he saw in us. because he was even wondering if we would really precipitate monoatomics or not when we first started doing the precipitation process in his kitchen. When he saw that we could do it and it wasn't really such a big deal, then he was encouraged to teach that at Rampa School under Jay-Z's auspices.
Oh,
and that's the wet, using ocean water at the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Was it recorded?
Yes.
How's that again?
Was it recorded?
Was it recorded for the Rampa students?
Oh, good question. I can't say it was because as far as I know, there's no cassettes or DVDs or VCRs available. I think it was one of those sessions that was just you had to be there, and if you weren't there, well, you weren't meant to be there. It was just really a matter of destiny if you failed to be there at that time, because it was a once-only demonstration.
Okay, thanks.
I heard about it from somebody that went to that demonstration, and he made arrangements for me and him to go up and meet the Essene, and we went up and met him. I believe you must have met him in 96, and then I met him in 97. I think it was May of
97. Yeah, I met him at a really, I could say, fortuitous time, because he was deeply, deeply steeped in his many, many alchemical experiments that he was carrying on parallel or simultaneous to each other. But he was quite alone. He didn't have family around him except for the occasional visit. And he had just a few friends come over occasionally. So the time we met him, we actually had quite a few sessions one-on-two. Meaning him and me and my soulmate, which was fantastic because I was able to ask him quite a few questions. And questions for me were usually of, cosmic nature. He used to joke about me being cosmic. That was kind of his nickname or appraisal of me. So I did ask him a lot of cosmic questions because my interest in Ormus has been how to use Ormus, in what way to apply Ormus to ascend, to bring the human body to the ascension point. And so he had quite a few answers for me.
So what sort of questions did you ask him, and what sort of answers did he give?
One of the things that came up recently that actually jogged my memory, I wanted to know something about the milestones, because he recommended that I stay on the Ormus, she called the white lion, the white stuff that we're all, or most of us, are making in our homes or workshops, that I stay on that for 12 years. Now, that was personal. That number certainly isn't cast in stone. It varies for every person, right? But he had a great way of scoping a person, which was to look into someone's eyes, lock in the eyes, and the content of a person's journey through lifetimes. So he scoped me, and that was his term, the word scope. And he said for me, 12 years, staying on Ormus, and then I'd hit the milestone, and the milestone for him is one of the milestones, the first major milestone, and that's for our Ormus enthusiasts who want to use it for spiritual growth and unfoldment, is that you meet your angel. Another tradition that I'm familiar with, I have a good friend who's a Buddhist nun here in this great Okanagan Valley, Zinru. If anyone's ever interested, email me and I can put you in touch with her. She explains it a different way, but it's just different wording. It's where you literally meet your angel, or in the Buddhist terminology, you meet your Buddha nature. It manifests to you in the physical realm, so that you meet yourself, your Buddha nature, physically, face to face, and it talks to you. And any questions that you have about spirituality or Ormus will be answered from there on in, once you've manifested your angel or Buddha nature within, to use Singer's words.
What was really fascinating is just yesterday I had a guy call me from one of my Ormus ads. I've got an ad at the moment in the Nexus magazine which published Barry Carter's article, which is a five-page article. It was a really fascinating article. And if you guys haven't seen it, go to nexusmagazine.com and search for it and have a read of Barry's wonderful article called An Ormus Manifestation. Anyway, so I'm talking with this guy, and he was actually at that talk and also at the talk of David Hudson at Yelm. And
lovely. For alchemy and getting alchemy back to the planet, she's had such a passion for alchemy.
And so he was actually at that thing, and now he sells Dr. Holder Clark's zappers and a whole bunch of herbs that go with it and all that stuff. And so he called me about Ormus, and he, one of his mates in New Zealand was also at Yelm. Another mate of his is in Switzerland. And so he called them all, and he's just starting a little sort of mini movement to get Ormus up and running in his little micro community. And it was just so fun when you talked about Barry brought up the subject of Yelm just now, and it just reminded me of this guy and the whole Rantha community who are just getting Ormized all over again. So
definitely.
What else did you ask of their scene that is memorable for you that is useful for this group to know?
Something that if you don't mind me sharing, it's a little bit on the hippier side, but I would like to say it nonetheless. Is that because I asked him a kind of a personal question. I said, why are you and why do you want to give this back to humanity, something that's quite common in ancient times? And he said that it was also, he considered, a matter of need or urgency, because the prophecies about Armageddon, in the sense of a nuclear war and a third world war, are not cast in stone by any means, but definitely quite likely, and that he really wanted to prepare humanity to have Ormus available on a large scale, like a worldwide scale, so that people could use Ormus to keep their genetics intact. I'm sure whoever studied about the Nagasaki and Hiroshima survivors in Japan know that the survivors and 2, 3, 4 generations afterwards suffer from genetic abnormalities and problems. So he was seen as a way to really help humanity in case things go kind of sideways, which he thought was very likely, not a little bit likely, but very likely.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, so as a group, we'd be people healing then.
When was the last time you visited with him? He moved away for a while, and then he moved back to his original place.
Oh, it's been a while. I'd say quite by accident. Well, you know, if there are accidents. I met him, I think it was in 2001, in the parking lot at a grocery store of all places. Just totally out of the blue.
Uh-huh.
Just out of the blue, you know, one of those events, and that was the last time. So it's been a while, definitely.
Was it at his place or yours?
At a grocery store.
I mean,
you know?
In his town or your town?
Understood that.
His town or your town?
Oh, no, it was at... Neither. That was the interesting thing. It was neither nor. It was a town that I don't go to very often and that he doesn't go to very often. Right?
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I felt that it was one of those things, he needed to tell me something or probably just observe my condition and as a confirmation, and that was all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was about 2001 when I got the giant walnuts from him. Actually, I saw them a couple times. I think I maybe got them a couple times as well. Did you ever see the walnut trees and stuff like that at his place?
Yeah, yeah. I saw the Walnut Trees, and also he was showing me the ornaments that he was using to feed them.
Uh-huh.
And beautiful, beautiful stuff. I mean, the quantities of ornaments at his place was just, you know, it just defies even description or imagination.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
just so much there.
Yeah, I know. I took a lot of pictures of it. I even took some pictures of metal he'd made.
Wow, beautiful.
So what alchemical techniques did he teach you? Was there anything beyond the wet method?
Not beyond, because on Barry's forum and Subtle Energy's website, he also showed me the method using the, I guess you call it the dry method, using the sodium chunks.
Uh-huh.
The first time I saw chunks of sodium metal on his kitchen table, I practically jumped out of my chair and screamed. And then he's just like, telling me, calm down, don't worry about it. I know how to use that stuff, you know. And he was so familiar with alchemy, including the dry method and the dangers of sodium, that it was all you could almost say child's play for him, you know. And to make, or transmute, I should say, you know, copious amounts of metal was also, you know, child's play for him. But I'm sure... you know, people can understand that because metals is kind of our standard that our currencies are or have been based on, that there's real dangers inherent in practicing that kind of alchemy, you know, the transmutation of metals, because the people who are the control freaks who want to keep the power base for their families up to the 13th or 14th generation just don't like competition, because these ancient families know these techniques, right, and have kept it for themselves.
Oh, yeah. Did he ever tell you about his experiences when he sold the stuff, and any problems that he might have had selling metal that he'd made?
It was not easy by any means. So, I mean, those of you who are proficient at the transmutation of metals, and I suspect some of you are by now, not so easy to drop this stuff if you want to make money off of it.
Uh-huh.
Because somehow you've got to find a way to stay under the radar. And if you don't, you'll be fucked.
That's what he told me. He told me that he'd had visits with people that had come to him. Oh, he said that he went to China one time with some of the people that he was selling this stuff to. They were people
that
were kind of I guess you'd say that they were organized crime, I guess you'd say. And he went to China with one of these guys, and the guy, when they got back, they were greeted by some guys who put guns to their heads. And these fellas said, "You're coming with us." Well, the guy that he was with, who was like mafia, okay, mafia guys don't show up in airports alone. And so a whole bunch of people got out of other cars and put guns to the first guy's head and said, "Don't ever do this again." And then, so it's like there's guys with guns to guys, other guys' heads, and they have guns to the Essene's head, you know? And it's like he knew how the information must have gotten out to the Platinum Metals cartel people that put the guns to his head. So he then said, "Well, I know who did this," and the guy who was with him, the mafia guy, said, "I'll talk to him." And what I heard, what he said that the guy said was that he talked to this guy and told him that if anything ever happened to the Essene, anything ever happened to him, anything, ever happen to him, that his genetic material would disappear from the earth, starting from the most remote portions of it. And so I guess he wasn't too worried about things like this anymore at that point. But I don't know. You hear stories like that a lot with people that try to sell metal.
Yeah.
Hi, when you say his genetic material will be wiped, does that mean his ancestry or...
Oh, his family. Every member of his family, everybody, every relation.
Gosh. Awful. Okay.
I mean, it was just a big threat.
It's a very compelling threat, though.
Oh, yeah.
And quite an amazing story. So clearly, the Essene, having these kind of abilities, may have even seen this coming. What was your impression about that?
I don't know. I never actually saw him do anything personally, any amazing psychic things or anything like that, but when I was there a couple of times, his daughter, the Essene's daughter, was there, and she said that one time that she was doing some... The Essene is his profession is a mining engineer, and so he's very, very careful about keeping his name unknown. And, well, I was telling the story about him going to China, and when he came back, being greeted by some people from the Platinum Metals Cartel.
Well, hey, I mean, it exists, right? There's been control freaks on this planet for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Way back to the days of Enki and Enlil, which I'm sure all of you guys are somewhat familiar with the stories of Enki and Enlil. So right that far back, there's been control freaks.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? We live with them on the same planet. Yeah, so disconcerting sometimes. But I don't know. Maybe some of you have seen the Danish alchemist's work. She's goes under the pseudonym Morel, and she did... some very nice pictures of her transmutations of metals. And she manages to stay under the radar, you know, not making too much at once.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. So there's ways and there's ways, right? And I don't know. Like, my interest in alchemy has been right from the beginning that I'm seriously interested how to use this stuff to ascend and go inter- or multidimensional by using it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know...
Why don't you speak to us a little bit about your understandings of that, Santi, Christoph, so far?
Well, so far, one post that I wrote a little bit about is an artist who was very much... patronized by Rudolf II. One of my favorite alchemical periods fairly recently is Rudolf II's court. They call it, the scholars since about 2000 have called it Rudolfine Prague, contemporary with Elizabeth I. Elizabeth I banned alchemy and the practice of alchemy unless you had a license already in England. So alchemists were kind of toast in England. At that time, many of them went to Prague, Rudolfine Prague. To this day, there's a street in Prague called Alchemist Alley, and you can see, tourists can go and see Alchemist's workshop. So it was very much promoted by Rudolf II. Unfortunately, in the West, probably for political reasons, he's been given the name that he was a madman or insane. But he managed to keep relative peace and really to promote and support alchemists at that time period. So it would have been the same time period as Elizabethan England. Even famous alchemists like Dee had to leave England and go to Prague to practice their art. And the English had spies watching people like Dee in Prague to watch their progress in, of course, transmutation of metals. So... basically a lot of monarchs were interested in alchemy more so for the transmutation of metals than for the spiritual aspect. But Rudolf II, he was very interested in it for the spiritual aspect. So he supported an artist named Archimbaldo. I'm sure you can find him by Googling or going on the internet. Archimbaldo did really brilliant portraits of people, but they were all done where a person was all made out of vegetables, you know, like broccoli and asparagus.
Oh, yeah.
And he was really sort of artichokes. So he was trying to show the composite nature of humans. And by showing the composite nature of humans, he was revealing that we are very composite, and we've got a small aspect of us that is ormus, literally, right? That we have all this ormus in our brains and central nervous system. So he was, in his subtle way, revealing that, look, we're also made out of that. Once we know we're made out of that, well, geez, that's when things start taking off.
So did you have any experiences where you witnessed him? He told me, and his daughter told me, that he'd done some astral projection.
Well, one thing that I got to witness many times was, maybe you did, and this is Barry speaking, maybe you witnessed this too, Barry. When I was in his kitchen, where he liked to have that chunk of sodium that used to freak me out, many times I felt hands stroking both of my shoulders and my upper arms.
Uh-huh.
And I felt it was a lovely presence, and eventually he told me, well, that's my angel. You know, my angel tells me sort of like the nature of a person and what to say and how to engage that person.
Mm-hmm.
So his angel is there pretty much all the time, giving him the guidance from, you know, a deeper perspective of how to deal with people, because mostly, let's face it, people wanted something from him. Very few people ever gave to him.
Can you tell us a little bit about the ormus that you made with the recent full moon, or wasn't full moon, recent group ormus?
Yeah, I started doing them before we actually got onto the group ormus. I started one session with one of our fellow alchemists in Korea, Melanie.
Uh-huh.
And we were chatting, and then, you know, very spontaneously we got the idea to just focus on ormus together at the same time, using some videos, music videos, to get ourselves into that altered state. So we used videos that had the solfeggio frequencies.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
And within a couple of minutes, we really got into the trance, and we could just keep chatting back and forth using email of what was happening on her side. At one point, I felt my hands disappear. I was observing my hands. I could still see them, but the energetic version of my hands were gone because I had no more feeling or sensation in them, and I felt like they were with her ormus in Korea. And she noticed that at the time when I was feeling them, my hands had disappeared, that her ormus was levitating out of her hands.
Oh, wow.
So that was the first kind of group, even though it wasn't a big group, a group of two, experiment. And we thought, well, if this happens, no telling what would happen with a group experiment. So Melanie proposed the group experiment, and to me it just mushroomed and just blossomed beyond the beyond, because I really like the ormus that I ingest now from the group sessions. I feel like I've plateaued out on the ormus I've been making for the past years, and now, because it has this consciousness of unity as well, it's just taken off, I don't know, exponential folds, all I can say.
Oh, wow.
That's fantastic. I know, Melanie's been a strong enthusiast of the group almost making sessions. Are you still on the line, Mel?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Start giving, Mel. Cool. Tell us your experience,
yeah,
of the group almost making sessions.
Are you still hearing an echo from me?
Not bad.
Can you hear me now?
Not so bad, no. It's okay. Yeah, it's good.
Okay. They're kind of, things in this realm are very hard to talk about in the words that we have. So I think it's something you just really have to experience. I'm really lost for words, but I think anybody who's participated in them with this music that we're all listening to at the same time, they experience something that, I don't know, Christoph, do you find it kind of hard to describe in words?
Yeah, because I find it's like I'm here, but I'm also elsewhere at the same time. That's why I find it quite hard to describe, and I'm aware of being in two places at once.
Yeah, that's one of the experiences. And, you know, the funny situation when you were telling the story of when you and I first experimented with this is that you started too soon. I wasn't set up yet to start doing this with you. I had the music going, and you went ahead and started focusing on my Ormus. And that's when I saw the kind of, I would say it's like spinning, it was spinning at me. And the whole field started growing really, really large. And so I went and chatted with you on Gmail. I said, hey, have you started? Because my Ormus is spinning at me and the field is suddenly growing and I wasn't even ready. And you said, yeah, I already started. And so that was really funny that I felt you from such a distance. You know, I knew right away that you had started on it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm so amazed about all these great non-local effects. I always call it non-local because I kind of take the quantum physics terminology. I like it because it's something that I think anyone can read up on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the quality of my Ormus is just so lovely now. I'm even at the point for the first time where I feel like I can give it to my old man, my dad, who's quite feeble, and I was always kind of careful of giving him anything that would be too strong, but because I feel now it's tempered with all this unity consciousness from making it together. I think we had one night, I think we had about 8 of us around different parts of the globe working together, and because of the unity consciousness, it's like it'll be absorbable and easy for him to take.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Barry, have you ever heard of group sessions like this before, group Ormus-making sessions from a distance?
No, I haven't, but I think it's a great idea. I have heard of people taking Ormus together in a meditation group, and they often tell about how their experiences all seem very, very similar or virtually identical when they do that. Their meditation experiences, they say that it feels like they're in total communication while they're meditating. The experiences
yeah.
are the same.
What I was going to suggest, so that we can get ourselves aligned in timing mail, is we literally have a conference call just like we're having right now, where we can just have the phone on speaker in the background. And, you know, when you got one of those cheap phone cards, it only costs you a couple of cents a minute. It costs me about 3 cents a minute or 2 cents a minute to call the U.S. conference line. Then we can make sure that we're all aligned at the right time. We've got our everything is set up, and we can just absolutely determine when we start the precipitation, and we'll be able to hear each other talking to our Ormus. That will be a cacophony of extraordinary declarations of intention.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And I can predict right now that will be a major buzz for everyone
yeah.
involved. Even if you weren't making Ormus, if you just tuned in and listened to the cacophony of intention. And it would absolutely make sure that we're all on the same page timing-wise.
That's a good idea.
Are you guys into it?
Hey, can we let some questions from the free room?
Yes, I have a question.
That's Bryce in West Australia, isn't it?
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I was wondering whether... Hi, Christoph. I was wondering whether the scene had any unique set of symbols that he used that might have had particular resonance or kind of thought form generators. So some kind of set of symbologies that were unique to him in structure and form.
Yes, there were some. One of the things that was unique for the scene is that he's a master of one of the ancient languages, Hebrew, fluent in Hebrew. And one of the reasons why I was able to roughly calculate how old he would be is because he explained to me that at the very beginning of the founding of the Mormon University in, I guess that would be in Utah, he was an instructor there in Hebrew. So I said, Jesus, he'd have to be at least older than 100 years, if not older than that. And so one of the things that he referred to as far as symbols go, and I have contemplated the symbol and found it very powerful and recurring, as in not only alchemy, but in other fields of human endeavor, is the symbols of the lion. So the ormus that we make, most of us anyways, or buy, is a simple lion, not too aggressive, and slow and steady is a white lion. And then the next kind of deeper level, you could say, of the lion symbology would be the green lion. The green lion is like a kind of like taking not quite the red pill, but close to the red pill in the movie The Matrix, where all of a sudden your perception opens wide right away. But the green lion, fortunately, is not permanent, so your perception isn't permanently opened. And then the final phase of the lion symbology is the red lion. So once you've made and ingested the red lion, then your perception to all the dimensions occurring here opens, but it opens permanently. So it's a matter of course, readiness, you know, for that. And so I saw some of his green lion, and one evening when we were alone, the Essene offered me to take the green lion, and I'm glad I didn't, because I wasn't ready at the time, and he told me I would get there just as well taking the white lion, except that it would take for me 12 years instead of in one evening or in one afternoon whenever you ingest the green lion. So, yeah, he did definitely have the symbology of the lion going there very, very strongly, and because he introduced me to that, it stuck with me too. You know, occasionally I do have a visit from a lion in consciousness.
Can you tell us some of the things that you've noticed since it's been 12 years now that you've been taking this?
One is so many times, I won't say all the time, but so many times, I know what someone's going to say to me in advance, whether I like it or not. And definitely wasn't the case 12 years ago, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Before I was kind of guessing my way through life, I could say. But now it's so common that I just know in advance. It's almost like, geez, should I even pick up the phone? Because I know how the conversation's going to go, right? That happens quite a bit. The other thing is I have had my first encounter with my angel, and wow, I mean, it's really one of those things that, like Melanie was saying earlier on, hard to put into words, because when you do meet your angel, you just do, and you know it, and there's just zero uncertainty. It's a phenomenal you know, experience, and the love that you feel from your angel is just it just defies the best love you've ever felt from anyone in your life, you know? And that's my case anyways.
Can you describe the situation or the circumstance when you first happened?
Well, believe it or not, I was driving uphill an extremely steep hill, one of the steepest in Canada. I don't know if anyone happens to know the stretch between Osoyoos, B.C. and Rock Creek, B.C. Anyways, in British Columbia, you know, land of mountains. I was just driving uphill, and I decided to take a little break from driving uphill and went to a viewpoint, and I met my angel, and very unexpectedly, special music in the background or anything, just I met, and to me, it's a her, you know. I think that's gender specific. You know, if you're a woman, maybe you're going to meet a male angel, but for me, it's a woman. Lovely, like just lovely beyond, and different eyes, skin color, just all different than human.
Oh, wow. Was it like she was just there? Yeah, could you tell us a little bit more about?
Well, she was the most stunningly beautiful female I've ever seen. I mean, just absolutely perfect, right? Gorgeous, perfect. Had oxen eyes. I remember the eyes. You know, the oxen eyes, like oxen meaning more oriental shape, and very mm-hmm. large eyes. And her skin was very, very radiant and giving off purplish blue light. Yeah, I get choked up just thinking about her.
Oh, wow.
And how would you describe how you perceived her?
How's that? I didn't catch that, Dennis.
How would you describe how you perceived her?
Well, I mean, Christ, the same way that I'm seeing Helen right now, you know, like with my eyes wide open.
Oh, wow.
Like sort of almost like reach out and touch her, kind of seeing her?
As a physical being, you know.
Did she say anything?
No words whatsoever. All in the mind, like mind to mind. I felt like we had a mind meld going on, and so she told me really deeply personal stuff
about her or about you.
I know about me.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, it was. It was one of the highlights of taking Ormus for a long, long time. Well, I mean, what's to say a long time? Because I gave the number 12 because the Essene had told me 12 years, maybe programmed me for 12 years
uh-huh.
as well. Because, of course, you know, when you're with someone who seems supernatural, it's easy to become hypnotized, and I realize that. So likely I was hypnotized, and I don't mean intentionally by that. But so I did believe the 12 years. And he also gave me further numbers. He didn't just stay at the first, milestone, so to say.
Uh-huh.
The next milestone was that once you meet your angel, then you get instructions. And the instructions are all about disciplining your mind so that you become a master, like self-mastery, over a course of 30 years. And he was specific about that. That wasn't necessarily just applying to me. That was general.
Uh-huh.
So 30 years of disciplines to master your mind. And then because obviously once you master your mind, you master the aging process. You don't have to get old and die. Then the next 100 years is actually practicing what you've, you know, learned in the 30 years. I mean, the disciplines of your mind, then you practice. You really go out into the world and you practice being a master or a wizardess.
Oh, wow.
So is the Athene really youthful looking?
Yes, very.
Considering
that he would be... Well, what I calculate is well over 100 years, if not at least, possibly close to 200, from the dates he gave me of who he's seen and who he'd met and who he'd taught, is he looks very young. I wouldn't say a day over 40. Barry, because Barry's met him, he's working on cosmetics because he had a nasty, vicious sabotage accident that took him 8 years to recover from.
Half of his face was gone, very distorted.
Yeah, very normal. And he's done a remarkable job of healing that, too.
Yeah.
Has he regenerated?
Not completely, but somewhat.
Oh, I see. And your angel, can you call her at will?
It totally depends on my state of mind, honestly, you know. I mean, the advice he gave me about after meeting your angel, that then you have 30 years of applying disciplines, whatever disciplines. I mean, he had specific disciplines, but I have parallel disciplines. You got to discipline your mind. It's just so essential to spend the 30 years disciplining your mind, and then you become a master. You know, you levitate rocks when you need to, and you lay your hands on people when they need healing of something grave and, you know, severe consequence for health, or you raise animals from the dead, right? I mean, you really practice after you've done your 30 years of discipline.
Now, you said that you when you got started, you sort of overdid it a bit. That you
Oh no, I don't know. Is this Dennis or Barry?
This is Barry. You said
I overdid it. Overdid it a lot. I wouldn't even say a bit. Because of course I was so delighted that I had this marvelous recipe, the wet method, in other words.
Uh-huh.
I tried all sorts of ocean waters, and I had friends get me ocean water from the Haida Gwaii's, or maybe on the map you know it as the Queen Charlotte Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And I just drank the stuff. Literally, I mean, I would take as much as a half a liter a day, you know, and
oh,
just
wow.
drink it down. Oh, and I was having...
Now, because magnesium makes you just go to the loo constantly.
Yeah, but what I was doing is I was taking it the step further, right, where you bring the pH down with the vinegar, and then you bring it back up to 8.5, 8.6 so that you get mostly monatomics and not too much magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing that, too, so that I would get, you know, more of the monatomics and less of the magnesium. You know what I mean, Dennis?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was taking a lot of that, and just having these wonderful states of being, and it went on for years. Just, oh, God, the lofty states of being, I just enjoyed it so much, and I recommend to anyone to, you know, let yourself go into it. If you can, you know, if you don't have family responsibilities, I didn't. I had just my soulmate, and she was pretty much on the same page at the time, and no children. My parents were both healthy at the time, and so I had no one to take care of. So I said, well, my God, might as well experiment to the fullest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting here with me is my good friend Helen. One of the experiences I had when I first heard the cosmic hum that, you know, that I'm sure many of you are here now, is Helen and her boyfriend at the time, Juan, we were all at my property near Osoyoos one night, and we were all supposed to go down to Jay-Z's Knight's Ranch for another exciting event with Ramtha, and we were going to meet up like some god-awful hour, like 4 a.m. or something horrible like that. And I had such a strong sense to say, no, as much as I'd like to be there, I have to be here on the land, and we were all sleeping outside as well. It was a nice summer day. So I stayed, they left. And I had this remarkable experience when I first heard the hum was the earth lit up for me, and I don't mean like from the sky, but the earth actually, like there was all this light coming off of the ground for about 30 seconds, and I heard this hum. It was as loud as if I had a refrigerator compressor in my, like right beside my ear, and it didn't leave me for many, many days. So that's how I first heard that hum when I was taking an enormous quantity because of the hormones at that time.
Oh, wow. And so why did you feel like you were taking too much? Or overdoing it?
Because I couldn't function in the real world. I mean, I could barely talk sometimes, and
uh-huh.
my knees would wobble. And, sometimes I would see... gods while I was driving on the road, and I had to pull over.
Uh-huh.
I thought, oh my God, I'm God. You know, hovering over the road, I better pull over until I get over this.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like it was triggering parts of my brain that we all have, but I just, didn't normally access those parts, and they were just being blown wide open all of a sudden, you know?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Logic, the ability to reason and think logically left me because my spirit showed me what the winning lotto numbers were going to be, but I was too blissed out and not logical enough to actually go and play the damn lotto numbers one time. And I could have been financially free.
Oh,
I was that out of it.
Yeah.
So effectively, it made you less than functional in the world.
Well, I mean, sure it did. And the other thing, too, is, like most of us, I realized that the world was quite insane in many ways. You know, that we've got proliferation of nuclear weapons and countries and people try and do each other in economically and do economic war. We've got economic hitmen and what's supposed to be the leading country of the planet, namely the U.S., and then we've got just so much insanity that I said, well, gee, this is quite a preferable state of mind than what's actually available in the late, 20th century, early 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very tempting to stay there, as you can imagine.
Did you diet change?
What talked you out of it?
It's a funny and sweet little story. I started getting promptings about what to do with my time and energy and life that I've been given by the Creator. And so I said, well, Jesus Christ, why don't you try and help get free energy off the ground in some way, shape, or form? Because you know very well it exists. Try and help it get off the ground. So I started contacting Joseph Newman because I knew that he actually did have a real working free energy device. And he was giving a public demonstration in Scottsdale, Arizona. So it was winter time, and I drove my car at the time down. I was going to drive all the way down to Scottsdale and meet him and talk to him and everything. But I broke down in a place called, I believe the state is Idaho. I get the states mixed up in the United States because you have so many of them, right, compared to what we've got in Canada. I think 50-some. And I believe it was Bliss. I broke down in Bliss, Idaho, and it didn't take me long to figure out, oh, my God, I get it. It's like for me to be able to get to where I wanted to go, Scottsdale, Arizona, I had to get beyond Bliss. So I feel I was guided in a very literal way to understand that it would be very good for me to get beyond Bliss, Idaho.
There you go.
The universe was teaching you in the most elemental way.
Well, that's what I need because I've been quite dense, so I need the I need that approach, you know. I definitely do. All my frost plugs are there. All eight of the damn frost plugs. And I didn't even know I had frost plugs at the time. Yeah, more than chances.
Anyone else got any questions of Christoph?
Yes, I have a question. This is Crystal from Seattle.
Hi, Crystal from Seattle.
I'd like to know, you've been taking it for 12 years or more, the Ormus. Is this the Ormus that you're making, or do you take other people's Ormus?
Well, not quite 12. 2009 will be my 12th year.
Okay.
So we're a bit premature, but we're getting close. I really enjoyed one particular batch that I might be mistaken, but I think it was Barry Carter that made it. I got it from Ascension Alchemy, and it was very, very lovely stuff. I had some awesome dreams on that. And to be honest, the best stuff I've ever had is still the Dead Sea stuff that I make when I'm in a really lofty state of mind, and I had a cancerous growth to heal 3 winters ago, and I said, okay, this is my challenge to really see if I can use the Ormus and focus to heal. So I made a really kick-ass, powerful batch of Dead Sea Water Wet Method Ormus. And I didn't mind at all going over the prescribed 10.7. You know, I'm sure are aware there's dangers in going over 10.7. Heavy metals may drop out. But the jury's definitely still out about Dead Sea Water. So I brought it up to probably close to 11. And I retreated in my apartment at the time. I didn't go to school or work. And just focused on the blue light healing my cancerous growth, and on the light of Jesus Christ and Mother Mary. And so I just kept focusing on that, seeing it there, and I had just the most marvelous manifestation 4 days into my focus, because I did focus for 4 days and nights, only getting up to either eat or pee. And I met a whole bunch of elementals. A whole bunch of elementals showed up in my room, were laughing and carrying on, and I asked them what on earth they were doing in my room and what they thought they wanted from me. And so they really laughed at me and said, well, look, guy, like you've been calling for healing for the last 4 days and nights. What do you think we're here for? So one of them... So one of them proceeded to go right into where my growth was, like literally just disappear through my leg and come back out. And later on, after they left, I checked and my growth had fallen off, like just actually fallen off my leg. And there was, it looked like a little piece of plastic that was left behind. And I pulled that out, and when I pulled that out, I started bleeding like a stuck pig so much so that I thought, well, maybe I should bring myself to the hospital. I just held the spot that I was bleeding from for a couple of hours, and eventually did die down because I wasn't really in any coherent condition to go to a hospital. And my growth was gone. You know, it was actually healed, and I can really say that the Ormus triggered the healing experience of meeting these elementals.
Did you get a scar?
Yeah, it's since healed, though. It lasted for, I'd say, close to a year, but it actually healed over totally.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it was amazing because I had the big C at that time, you know, and I was a bit nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what triggered it, too, was my godson at the time had been shot and killed outside of a bar in Montreal.
Mm.
And... Oh, he was like a son to me because I babysat him all the time when he was a little boy, and I had some other personal problems. So, it's like I manifested that cancer because for a while, I'd say several weeks, I really didn't want to live anymore.
Well, that'll do it. You said you
saw blue light. That's the thing about the Ormus. You got to watch your thoughts, like. You know, I mean, I've played with it, that's for sure. I've played with fire, so to say. It's such a powerful amplifier that if we do get into states of grief or loss or bereavement, it's a dangerous thing to be taking during those times because we can amplify that and you can cause yourself some serious illness.
Oh, yeah. Did you see some... You said you saw something about a blue light.
The elementals that I saw that actually did the healing,
mm-hmm.
was about 20 of them. They were small creatures, between 2 and 3 feet tall, made out of a very radiant light, and they came in a various assortment of colors, bright blue, bright orange, bright yellow, bright green, bright pink, very almost neon colors, you could say.
Oh, wow.
Christoph, when you take Ormus, do you take a smaller amount now, or do you...
Yeah, for sure.
British
okay,
area.
That's what I wanted to ask because you were saying
I do. Yeah, I do. I sometimes go through periods where I like to reuse, like make myself young again. And during those times, I'll stay for a few weeks and take enormous quantities, and then focus on have symbols. One of the gentlemen who I spoke with earlier mentioned symbols, and I have symbols for myself, radiant youth and health and vitality. And then within a few weeks, my body really listens to what I'm focusing on because I've got that massive amplification effect from the Ormus, and I get younger. One time I tried it for several months, and I went back to visit my old folks, my parents in Northern Ontario, and they were shocked because they didn't recognize me. They were like, "What happened? What did you do to get E19 again?
Did you take pictures?"
What's that?
Did you take pictures? Send us pictures.
I thought it wouldn't be modest
photos,
to take
buddy,
all those
photos.
It's modest to take pictures.
I suppose I just, it never occurred to me, you know. I suppose I could sometime. I could try the before and after.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really neat to play with that. I don't know if you, some of you are playing with that, where you focus on being young for a while, as young as you want, and then you become that, but then if you don't keep up the focus, then you get older again. But I like it. I've tried it about 3 times, and it's marvelous when you get, you know, the comments about how old you are, and it's like, well, no, they only knew.
I have a question. Did the saint ever talk about the differences between using Ormus, like with a wet method, versus something like a trap water Ormus?
You know, one of the things that he made quite a lot of, and he made it for healing purposes for other people, because he was really concerned about quite a lot of people, about healing them. And he didn't only mean healing on the physical level, but he met seekers, spiritual seekers, who had a split mind. And they had, you know, quite a few spiritual seekers have a split mind where they only want to embrace the light part of themselves, but want to divorce themselves from their own darkness or their own, you know, survival mechanisms, which is normal for humans. So he made copious amounts of monoatomics with the dry method, and he had a name for that one, which
M3.
Specifically M3. And I witnessed one woman who went from being really severely split in her personality, where she had one person that was a being of light, and the other side of her was, you could almost say, murderous, or close to that, dangerous to be around, and in intent. And he really helped to heal her with M3. So M3 has some, using the dry method, making M3 has some remarkable abilities to heal people mentally too, not just physically.
So I have heard from some other people that a lot of the Ormus stuff came from the Hathors, and they were known as the healers, I guess, the Hathor temples in Egypt.
Yeah, there was a woman in lived in Vancouver. She was American. I don't know if you might have met her. If you're into the Hathors, you might know her. Dandara Sky is her chosen name. She became a really great healer. She used the Ormus to heal herself. She'd had 10 children, a lot of surgery to have the 10 children, and, you know, a lot of life energy spent on raising 10 children. But then she had this sense that of destiny, where she knew she was a Hathor being and that she had a purpose to heal people. So she used enormous quantities of Ormus, more than me, to get over being grossly overweight, close to 300 pounds, severe diabetes, where she needed needles all the time, and problems with her lungs. So within 6 months of drinking close to a liter of Ormus, but mind you, that's mixed with the magnesium hydroxide, right? Close to a liter a day,
she transformed. It was a remarkable transformation. She'd lost all that weight, no longer had diabetes, didn't have any problems moving her legs or pains in her legs anymore that were probably activated by diabetes. And she just proceeded to heal people, and which was her calling. Yeah, Dandara Sky. You might be able to find her on the internet.
I think I've heard of her.
Yeah. She does.
Empathers are doing sound work. They're using frequency sound healing.
She did some other interesting work that you might be interested in with astrology. She helped me personally, but also other people. For example, my astrological chart, I don't have much Libra or no Libra, which means I haven't had a sense of balance. So she was able to imprint the Libra symbol onto me etherically, and that way, that was her way of helping me to gain a sense of balance. And I got to say, it worked.
So what are the other major, look, you've been using Ormus for quite a long time right now.
Yeah, 11 years, pretty much.
You just outlined some fabulous stuff. Angels, you think, I mean, look, you sound like an overgrown teenager.
I feel like one.
In your youth and vitality, you know, it was difficult for me to get you to shut up long enough to be able to speak to you when you first got on the call, because there's so much you wanted to say. and that is
not
classic.
Kidding, eh?
That is a classic indicator of too much energy and youth. But besides those qualities, what else have you noticed in your life that you would say you've got to have almost in your life to people?
Well, another one is the, knowingness, where you know without needing your physical, you know, five senses, you kind of know situations in advance of them occurring. And because you know, you have more choice, and the choice is you don't have to engage the situation in the same way because of knowing it. You can choose not to engage it. You can then choose to engage it in the same way as you always would have, which is unlikely, or you choose to change it by putting a different spin on it because you know in advance the outcome of your choices and your actions. So it really has a great enhancement as far as time goes, because I feel the knowing really is more so than anything else this grasping or this unfolding of the fourth dimension of us, which is time, that we can go easily into future times, 5 minutes in advance, 30 minutes in advance, an hour in advance. And when I first met the Essene, he told me that, and I really didn't understand what he was on about where he just keeps seeing events before they actually happen. And now it's starting to happen to me quite often.
So how do you use that?
Well, the thing is, let's say I have an event that I know is going to happen, and I don't really want that event to happen. It's not harmonious, joyful, or so I know in advance it's going to happen, so I put a different spin on it. I approach that situation entirely differently, basically with a light heart.
Could you give us an example of something you put a spin on that's had a different outcome?
Well, I remember with my father, my biological father, being quite fragile and ill this year, 2008, because he suffered a stroke. And so many times I knew in advance what was going to happen and what the next event was going to be. So I began to put my mind in there and say, okay, well, if this is all true about the observer and that the observer in me can change events, I said I'll keep changing things And, of course, change things for a better outcome so that the situation won't be dire or grim, so that there will be healing instead of bad news. And it seemed, in my mind, to happen repeatedly.
What was the end effect on him and you?
Well, part of it is, you know, learning this balance between coercion, meaning using my knowingness as a tyrant and a bastard, or using my knowingness in a way that benefits everybody involved. So it's a fine line sometimes. Sometimes I still I want to be the bastard because I still like to control. But more often than not, I ask for and listen to guidance. So when, at one point when I knew that my dad could either depart from the world or stay with us, I went into his intensive care unit, and I was able to, you know, speak to him mind to mind, because he was barely able to physically speak, and just ask him, do you still want to be here? And if you do, what do you still want to do? And posing that question, it's like, because I knew to pose that question in advance, it just changed the whole outcome, where he really connected to his soul to find out, well, what do I really want to do? And do I still really want to be here? And he did, and he found out what he still wanted to do, a couple of things in particular. And it's like it precipitated this beautiful healing event where he came back to himself.
Nice. Did he have much cognitive understanding that you kind of interceded that for him?
To a certain extent, because he saw me not as I look. I'm Caucasian, a short guy, stocky, but he saw me as a mix, half Caucasian, half Oriental, and I've met this guy before, and it's myself in the future lifetime. So he was seeing me as my future self, and that was my confirmation that I was talking to him soul to soul, not, you know, physical body to physical body.
That's a benefit for both of you immediately.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing because me and my dad have never really gotten along at all, you know, and I'm sure that in other lifetimes he murdered me or I murdered him. Probably took turns. So, you know, he's been my greatest obstacle, my greatest lesson, and vice versa, and he's told me that too, right? So it was wonderful being able to really reach a state of peace with each other.
Yeah, nice. That's really nice.
Oh, it's amazing.
Christoph.
So we're going to spend another quarter of an hour for this call. So let's hear any other questions that people have for Christoph. This has been an amazing call so far, and we've got another quarter of an hour. So who wants to say something? Who wants to ask a question?
I have one more question. I know I've asked a couple. This is Crystal again. When you learn from the insane, and you said that he felt his purpose was to bring this knowledge to the public, to the greater awareness of humanity, did you feel like that was part of your purpose too, that in him teaching you?
No, I didn't. I felt it was the purpose of my soulmate, because I had the great fortune to meet my soulmate quite a few years before I met Lucine. And she's always been, in her nature, a philanthropist, you know, really deeply a philanthropist. And I wouldn't say I had the same nature. Myself, it was more about me, you know, more about can I use this stuff to ascend to the next dimension, to get out of this, at the time, I thought, hellhole. I don't think that anymore, but I did think that at the time. And also, I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity to make a lot of money. So I didn't have the same intentions as my soulmate. And I can honestly say that Armas has helped me to transmute quite a bit in what my intentions are.
So you felt like it's more of a personal transformation for you?
Not even personal. It's more like it takes a human that is dense and basic, motivated by survival, because we have a society that mostly promotes survival and separation and not working together, and competition, even from grade school, where we have separate desks and are punished if we share information and knowledge during exams or tests. So have a very primitive level of transmission of knowledge rather than sharing. So for me, in a sense, my adaptation was to think, well, Jesus Christ, how do I get off of this hellhole, and what's the way? So that was one of my motivations for ascension. When Armas came along, he said, my God, my prayers and dreams have been answered. Here is something to actually ascend. But over time, I feel like the Armas has transformed not just personally me, but a human, you know, to go from being less survival-based and, in a sense, you know, thinking about me first, thinking, well, maybe we can somehow collectively change this mess of a kind of a rat race.
Richard, just start with your list. What question do you want to ask?
The top question that I'd like to ask is that I'm getting some pressure to teach, and I've started teaching people, and I've also encountered, and I also feel the same way somehow that Christoph spoke about teaching people that might be wanting to use this for profit. And I've noticed that there are some people, and I think Christoph has met them, that are they're still more profit-oriented than spiritually more oriented, but they're starting to swing around to the more important aspects of this learning. Anyhow, I'm made the decision to start teaching some people how to do this, but I was just wondering if there's any guidance that Christoph could offer me in this respect.
Well, one thing that I noticed, because when I was, first of all, selling the monatomics, making the monatomics and selling it, to mostly to students at Rantha School of Enlightenment in Washington State, is I was charging copious amounts of money for the Ormus, not just for making it and the lie and the whole process, which is laborious, but I was also charging very large amounts of money and making a lot of money in the process, too. But I just started getting heavier and heavier feeling in my chest the more that I was doing so. And eventually, I really come to the realization that it's good and fine to charge for your time, your effort, you know, your lie and your procuring your ocean water, whatever water you use, or your dry method materials. Fine to charge for all those materials and your labor, but I just got such a nice, clear conscience when I stopped charging for the actual Ormus itself.
Yeah, I understand that one very well, and I don't charge for anything other than my expenses, and I don't charge anything at all to the people that I'm teaching. The thing that I'm having a little difficulty with is the propriety of teaching someone who could, I'm not sure if I can potentially discern between someone who might abuse the knowledge and someone who wouldn't.
Yeah, well, honestly, that's always a difficulty, but my friend and master alchemist, Helen, who I've worked with alchemy for years now, she has something really important to say to that question, and that's the Ormus will actually take care of it. It's like you are only facilitator. You are not teacher. That's important to get that out of your consciousness, because it can lead to a nasty experiences to shed egotism about being a teacher. Ormus is the teacher, and you're the facilitator.
Okay, I got you. I knew you were going to say that, but I thought I'd best try and clear
you can make
that
one for that one.
I really did know you were going to say that. I don't know how, but that's the way I've been feeling about it. And incidentally, I started teaching, so I have.
Where are you at? Where are you at? Where you live?
Yeah, same place.
What area of the world?
You've been up to my place, and you've even met the brother of one of my students. So,
is this Richard from the island?
It sure is.
Oh, my God, Richard. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm glad you survived the Devil's Roll experience.
Yeah, wasn't that fun? Yeah, I've been back here.
I'm glad you got the boat started again when we were up at Devil's Roll.
Yeah. Yeah, I might
have. Otherwise, we wouldn't be alive to tell the tales now, eh?
Yeah, oh yeah, we've had lots of adventures up there, and it's good fun. It's all kinds of technical difficulties to surmount, but we've got the boat in tip-top shape now.
Well, I can't wait to get some more water off of you. You always find the best water.
I've got 30 buckets in my carport right now, and you're welcome to as much of it as you can carry, and I'll go get some more. There's time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Bring buckets.
That's awesome, Richard.
I'm running out of buckets. I seem to be running out of time because I spend most of my evenings between the hours of around 11 and 4 a.m. stirring buckets. So.
I hear you. I know that one. Well, I'm really glad that you're still at it because I think you make a really good teacher for this stuff.
Oh, great. I appreciate that, but I won't let it go.
Facilitator. Ormus is the teacher.
That's what I've been feeling. In any case, that is exactly the answer that I expected I would get, and in almost exactly those words. So, tell Helen, thank
well,
you very
much. Thank Helen for that.
Yeah, tell her thank you very much for me, and tell her I already got the answer before the call. I just wanted to do it sort of physically, and there's another example of what Ormus will do for you.
That's true.
So, Dennis, are you still taking questions?
Yeah, anyone else can ask a question.
Okay, well, I have a comment. Christoph, you were talking about Kuan Yin. I had to step away for a minute, and when I came back, I thought you were talking about Kuan Yin. Is that right?
Is this Melanie?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Kuan Yin's been in the cards for me because one time I did a very long focus after I had really gotten too blissed out and wasn't very well able to come back to the normal sort of physical reality. I asked Kuan Yin for assistance for 100 days. I did a retreat, and I got to say, she really came through. She helped me with the whole process of integrating the spiritual with material.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about Kuan Yin for a minute and just make a comment on how I've worked with Kuan Yin in my Ormus making. And back when I was in Vegas in the spring, I was making a lot of Ormus. For a lot of people who were on the call, I was giving out gifts during the raffle, and I was working with Doreen Virtue's Ascended Masters cards and book. And basically, for every person I was making Ormus for, I pulled a card for them. I tried to pull an Ascended Master that could work with me on that person's Ormus. And I didn't really feel a lot of the Ascended Masters, but when I pulled the Kuan Yin card, I felt an enormous presence instantly, and that vibration just really, really just made some wonderful, wonderful Ormus, and it was just a very tangible presence. And later I was researching a bit on Kuan Yin, and I found that she, I was reading a book on Ascended Masters, and I read that Kuan Yin particularly is an Ascended Master who is very close to us here, and can be called upon for assistance at any time. And the Chinese call upon Kuan Yin regularly. And I found it really interesting because the experience I was reading about in this book seems to be an experience that many people are having with Kuan Yin. So I would like to recommend other people when they're making armas to experiment with calling upon Kuan Yin. I think you'll find that vibration, that energy, will enable you to make a really wonderful product.
Melanie?
Yes.
With Kuan Yin, one of the reasons I think I discovered Kuan Yin quite a few years ago is because in the annals of history, meaning what's recorded, there's very few ascended women masters. That's not to say that there aren't plenty. There's probably a lot of ascended women masters, but they've had to do so in seclusion and privacy because of the forces that be, or the powers that be on the planet, haven't allowed those images to be portrayed. It's like they've been severely suppressed, with the exception of some Asian countries. So Kuan Yin happily wasn't suppressed. But I feel with the Ormus, what would be very helpful for all of us, particularly the women, though, who make Ormus, is to go deeper into the deeper mind and find the other feminine alchemists who've ascended and used alchemy to ascend, and bond with them and ask them for assistance and bring their presence forward, because Kuan Yin is just one that fortunately made it into annals of history and that we still have with us to be able to turn to.
Interesting. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Well, listen, we're getting down to our last minutes here, so one more question, please.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to be a hog, but I've got...
Be a hog!
Another personal, sort of personal question for Christoph, and that's, when the heck are you coming up here? Or do you want me to bring some water down to you the next time I get a chance?
It's God, would it be nice if you could bring some water to Helen's place. She's got a garage for some of your awesome water, from Devil's Hole especially.
Okay, I can do so. Email me and give me your address, and I'll get something down to you the next time I can get down there. It might be a while, because I'm still a bit tied up with Dad here.
But you realize that you're asking him to take it to Helen.
Richard, do you ever get to Vancouver? Because Helen gets to Vancouver quite a bit.
Yeah, I do.
I'll give you Helen's email address, and I'll give yours to her.
Yeah,
because she gets there way more often than I do.
Yeah, email
it to Vancouver.
Email
that would be so good.
If you can, at rnj1@telus.net.
Yeah, okay, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, I've been hopelessly boggled down with computer problems here. My computer was trashed, so I lost a whole bunch of stuff.
I admire all the healing work that you keep doing with your dad.
Oh, my dad's only the one small part of that one now. I've been roaring around this, working at the healing part of it very diligently, or at least diligently for me, and I've got another quick one for you, too. I find when I take a lot, I sometimes have a tendency to get into a sort of a slowed-down mode, which it makes it hard to get anything done. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I know. I know that one.
In order to... I don't want to interrupt the process, but in order to function, sometimes I have to cut back a little bit. Because I get way...
I hear you, because I have two in order to deal with some family responsibilities.
That's precisely where I'm at right now. So, anyhow, I just thought I'd float that one out to you, and I'll try...
Yeah, Richard, if there's any way that you can do candle focus in the evenings before you go to bed... I can't say enough about the advantages for you to do candle focus just about an hour or an hour and a half before you go to bed.
Yeah, I've got a question about that for you, too. Do you use one or two candles?
I alternate. Sometimes I use one, sometimes two.
Okay.
I don't stick with either method in a sense to keep my mind more flexible?
Okay. I've used both.
Right on.
Dennis, can I ask you to make an announcement that's connected to Christoph?
Go ahead.
You know, we talked about the session. You chose a very auspicious time for us, the winter solstice, is that right? Or the summer solstice for you. And that's our next group Ormus-making session, and Christoph will be there, and you'll be there, and I'll be there, and hopefully Barry will join us, and many of the others on this call. Can you make the official announcement and tell us why this is a special time?
Well, as it happens, the two most powerful days in the astrological calendar are the solstices, the winter and summer solstice. The winter solstice in the northern hemisphere is considered the major turning point because it's the darkest night. It's also the shortest day. And it is the celebration time when the pagans, who are the people of the earth, have celebrated the passing over of the old cycle. And they would have a week of celebrations. And the early church, when it wanted to establish dominion, it planted Jesus' birthday right in the middle of this week of celebration. Because this was such a powerful celebration that during this week, all the social rules were suspended for that week. And so if you wanted to sleep with your neighbor's wife, if you could get away with it, you could do it that week. So, you know, the pagans were not going to let go of that celebration, so they stuck Jesus' birthday right in the middle of it and co-opted it. Well, that was the winter solstice, which is starting, in fact, in 12 hours from now. It's actually 11 and a half hours from now, right now. So for the East Coast people, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, and the West Coast here at 4:30 in the morning, and here it's 10:30 at night, and Sydney is 11:30 at night, and Bryce, you'll be at 9:30 at night in West Australia, and Melanie, you'll be about Bryce's time, I think. So that's the time when astrologically the sun moves into Capricorn. And
okay.
So that is the solstice, and that's a really powerful time to make Ormus. It's a powerful time to make Ormus dedicated to anything you particularly want in the realm of your career and the way you help other people on your planet. That's this one. And the way you make headway in your life. And I know that you personally and what's been proposed is make almost specifically for plants and animals. Well, this would be a perfect time for it because all the elementals will join in. Is that mostly what you wanted to hear?
Yeah, this is wonderful. So this is about 11 hours from now. And I could send out a link to the music again because I feel the music is, Christoph, wouldn't you say the music is a real powerful factor in these group alchemy sessions we do? Well, maybe you could make a comment on this. We felt the music is a real important factor, and you know, you've published a bit on resonance, and I'm guessing that the music is an aspect of that. I don't know much about resonance. I'm just starting to discover it because of your work. Is resonance connected to what we're experiencing with the music and the group alchemy sessions?
Oh, I'm convinced that it is. I think that we're working, the Ormus picks up the resonances of all kinds of things. The resonances of homeopathic resonances, the resonances of biodynamic thought resonances and all of that. I think it's just a carrier of resonance. That's what it does.
Oh. It seems to unite us somehow when we play this particular frequency, the solfeggio frequency, the one called Miracle.
You could also possibly use similar shape resonances as a way of doing that as well. Perhaps put a similar Merkaba or something like that shape underneath the Ormus on everybody's Ormus. That would be worth experimenting with.
Oh, without the music.
Crop circles are really powerful like that.
Exactly. Pick a shape and try it.
Would we run into an issue of having too many signatures at one time? We tend to use, Christoph usually picks out a picture and a piece of music, a particular frequency. And so we have both a picture that we're all looking at simultaneously and also listening to the music simultaneously. Would it be better for us just to use one or the other, either the music or the picture? Is there a problem with conflicting resonances?
I doubt it. I'd try it. Okay. Give it a shot.
Okay. So I'll send out the music again to everybody and a picture for this session. And Dennis, you may want to reiterate the time and a brief note to everybody.
It's the time is 4:30 in the morning in west coast of the U.S. and Canada. 7:30 in the morning on the eastern time zone. 10:30 for us here in Queensland. 11:30 in New South Wales, Victoria and Tassie, and 9:30 over West Australia.
Say that again?
I said so very early for us here on the west coast of Canada.
Christoph mentioned he's going to make the Ormus tonight, and he's just going to get up at 4:30 and meditate on it so that he can join the session.
And more often, if you want to do something like that, don't just meditate on it. Stir it and tell it stuff. Stir it and interact with it and give it further instruction. Because Ormus behaves like it knows exactly what's going on. Look, it looks like an inert liquid, but it behaves like it knows what's going on. And so I speak to it. I tell it what its properties are, and those properties get duplicated in the experience and in the life of anyone who takes it. It's a magical substance.
Well, I really love your idea about the level of consciousness of Ormus.
It's not an idea. It's a fact.
Well, I like your idea that became a fact.
Well, the thing is that the high level of consciousness that you bring to making your Ormus, the Ormus is going to amplify the high level of consciousness.
Do you remember the phone call I had with you a few months ago where you told me about the consciousness of Ormus? And I had never really worked with that aspect, the consciousness of Ormus. So that night when I went to bed, I just gave just a brief thought. I said, I wonder what it would be like to bond with the consciousness of Ormus. And I did that night, and I felt like I could experience what it's like to ascend. And that was just from the consciousness of Ormus. So I'm working with that thought of yours more and more.
It's really fascinating to hear Christoph's account of meeting the ascend. He brought the wet method effectively to us. He said that if you take Ormus for 12 years, the angels will show up in your life, and then you're going to get 30 years to master your mind, and your aging will stand still. Now Christoph is at his 11th year already, and he's already got a major angel already showed up for him a year early. He's already called on the elemental to heal his cancer quite successfully, and that was a couple of years early. So this guy's making serious results happen in his life. And
yeah, one thing, Dennis, that might be easy to forget too, is often I have the sense that the Essene is checking in on people and assisting people in consciousness with their journeys with Ormus.
Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very much by the sound of it. And from Christoph's description, he's probably a couple of centuries old, given the stuff that he was telling his experience of with the early Mormon church. getting set up in Utah. Well, that takes a fair bit of age.
This lifetime, but he has the memory of 10 lifetimes. So that goes back to about 4,000 years ago.
So does this go along with walking on water, the Ormus?
Boy, yeah, search me on that one. That one I don't know about yet.
It's the levitation stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it could. Hey, I'm waiting for you to get the information on which clay it is to make the flying carpets.
Oh, the clay?
Yeah, which specific clay it is to dye the fibers of the carpets, because, I mean, that would be just too awesomely good to have flying carpets here in British Columbia again.
I'd say they'd get a bit wet on the West Coast.
Well, hey, no problem. We put a little plastic over the top.
Hey, yeah.
And Okanagan's pretty dry, too.
Oh, yeah, you guys are on the sunny side.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm counting on you for that information, Melanie.
I love that article, the piece that Barry put together on the flying carpets. There are numerous things to learn from that, like flying carpets.
Yeah, and I'm looking for that. I'm looking for the clay, because obviously it's some sort of clay.
Well, geologically, look down that area.
If you're not up to speed on this, there's a very specific kind of clay that apparently was used to treat a rug that gave it levitational qualities. It was a combination
I'm going to call it a night here. And me and Helen, we're going to try and finish the Ormus that's already started. And I wish you all the best, and Merry Christmas and Happy High Holidays if you're Jewish.
Happy Solstice to you.
Sorry, buddy. Thank you very much. It's been a fantastic show. You've been an amazing guest, and I'm going to get you back sometime next year. Are you into it?
And Harvey Christian.
Yeah, Dennis, please keep in touch. You know the easiest way to get hold of me is by email. And I'm counting on you and Melanie to find out the clay, because I'm serious about making flying carpets. To find out what kind of clay it is.
I'll try to find it. I have some ideas.
I think that.
Well, I'm sure looking forward to that.
I think the shape of the carpet, the shape of the weave is as important or maybe more important than the kind of clay.
Good. Well, Barry, I'm counting on you for that aspect.
I have no idea.
It'll come to you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No doubt it'll come to you.
Listen, I'm going to call up now. Thank you so much.
Back to you all. Good to talk to you.
Before you sign up, just say, this is Dennis from Australia. Goodbye.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet you in Australia.
Come on down, buddy. Come on down.
I'm sure you know that the Essene goes to Australia often.
Well, you have to give him my address. I'll send it to you on email.
It sounds good.
See you soon.
All the best to you. Have a good night.
Bye now.
Happy solstice.
Have a good night, eh?
Thanks, everyone. It was a great call.
Yeah, thanks for participating.
Thanks for precipitating.
The snow in my yard tripled during the call. So Ormus really works.
No,
snow in my
does it ever. Does it ever. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye.
Bye, buddy.
Bye, Dennis. Thank you.
Bye now.
Happy solstice.
Thank you. And you're leaving now. And you're leaving. Say goodbye before you go.
Goodbye before you go.
Bye-bye.